Hello?
We got it.
Okay, so we just kind of have observed, let me talk in the microphone, over the course of the past couple of months, there's a little bit of a disconnect between what the youth group is doing and what the congregation knows of the youth group and what the youth group is doing. And so we just kind of wanted to explain some more about our service trips that we have been going on and our learning trips, and we call them service learning trips. And we want to explain why we are doing them and give a little bit of history as why we're not doing mission trips. And so we first want to explain what a mission trip is, because there's a little bit of confusion and the dialogue has begun to change recently. So this kind of looks at a mission trip in a historical sense, but it still applies to today. And so we can see on the first bullet that it is self-serving and self-fulfilling. And so what we mean by that is oftentimes when people go on mission trips, they do it to make themselves feel better. And though that might not be the intention, it is something that is present, and people serve others so that they can feel better about themselves. It also is historically intentioned to convert non-Christians to Christianity. And then as you move forward, it becomes a temporary fix, because you're coming into another country oftentimes, or another culture, and you're maybe and people who are going on mission trips are doing the right thing, but it doesn't really solve the root of the problem. And so though it puts a band-aid on the issue, it doesn't really create lasting change. It also derives from a savior complex, in which the people coming in to serve on mission trips feel that they are superior to those who they are serving, and that, as you may understand, can be a really harmful notion to have when you are going on these trips, because it oftentimes has resulted in a lot of harm to these communities that people are coming into. Also, mission trips often otherize and exotify other people and cultures, and what we mean by this is you go to foreign countries that you don't really have a lot of information about, and you are learning about new cultures that you don't have any information about, and you're doing what you think is right, and though that is theoretically good in practice, it is actually really detrimental to these cultures, because it often, you don't have that knowledge of how the culture is actually practicing. And so it ends up harming their practices, and yeah. And it's also aimed to change people and their cultures. And does anyone else want to add to that?
Goes back to like mission and like history has been like a conversion process. So there is that lack of understanding of culture, so even if the intention isn't to change people, but there's also, like, mission trips that, like, that intention was to change that culture and get them to be with you. So there's kind of, like, two things here. That, like, one is, like, those conversion mission trips that have happened in history, and then the other part...
And still today, though.
And, yeah, still continue. And then, like, the other part is the mission trip that it's, like, that unintentional harm because of lack of understanding. Where, like, unintentionally, like, intentions going in aren't wrong by any means. They're like, oh, we have resources, we have money, whatever it is. We want to go and help this other group. But if you look at the root of it, the lack of understanding and kind of the idea going in that, like, you're this, like, majority superior person to, like, help this, like, minority, that ends up being a like detrimental cycle, and can have impacts that aren't necessarily the intention of the mission, but can have that impact, which is kind of what we've discussed and figured out and kind of realized, which is why we've kind of like made this switch.
And so we have shifted to what we call a service learning trip, and so Alice is going to explain that.
Yeah. So throughout our time as a youth collective, we've talked about the differences between mission trips and service learning trips. So, like, what is a service learning trip? It's going into a situation. There's no hierarchy, and one group thinking that they're better than another group. And it has no intention of it changing someone's culture, as is very prevalent in a lot of mission trips. And we're really working to understand the situation that people are in, that we're going into. A lot of things that we've done in our time before going to New Mexico and El Paso is researching people's situations that we might be encountering and people's stories, and just informing ourselves of things that are going on in those groups. And going in, we are not intending to convert people to Christianity and just letting people's cultures be their cultures and not trying to change any of that.
Yeah. So this is kind of like, that is what service learning is. So this is kind of that why. So overall, our goal is to just like expand our understanding and our knowledge. Yes, many of us fall in this like white Christian majority, but there's a lot of other really cool cultures that, like, at least personally, like, I don't belong to. But because we live in such this global world where you're surrounded by all these different people, the goal of a lot of these trips is to expand that understanding and that knowledge of that culture so that we can be respectful, and if there is help or support needed, we can support in a way that is sustainable and impactful, and not in a way that could unintentionally harm another culture. So obviously, like with what Alice just said, like our intention was never to like be preaching God's word so that everyone like would convert to Christianity. Our goal was to go understand, like, we didn't hide that like we're from this like collective church, like youth organization, but like our goal wasn't to convert anyone. Our goal was to go in and understand their culture and what their spirituality is. And then a lot of what we've focused on, especially in this past week, is finding those personal stories. So throughout the planning of the trip, we started forming these relationships with people, like this man named John, and he helped like organize almost all of our time in Albuquerque, New Mexico, because he is a native himself, and he knew like all these different places that we could go to be more informed and see the history, and just like learn more about that. So we've really tried to get those personal stories and hear from people that are part of those cultures and have gone through the experiences that those cultures have gone through, to really get that like firsthand experience of like what this culture that's foreign to us is. And then also looking through this, like kind of what I was saying before, is that like we've gone through and evaluated like what this like stereotypical like mission trip is, and we've like looked at like the historical impacts of it, where there is culture that gets misunderstood and people are like belittled, and there's like this majority savior complex, which essentially is just like the idea that like this majority group is going in to like save and help this minority group, which, if there's a lack of understanding, can be kind of detrimental. So it creates a usually sometimes unintentional like hierarchy of power, and who's like the better person saving this like lesser like needing help group, when instead, like with service learning, why we're making this shift to these type of trips is that we want to go in as equals, that are just trying to like understand, and then almost have like that group tell us how we can help them instead of us planning the agenda of how we can help them. So yeah, that's kind of why we've like shifted to this like service learning aspect.
And so now we want to explain how our own trip to New Mexico and to Texas was a service learning trip. And so first off, we came into it with no intention of changing people, but we really just wanted to better understand the systemic injustices that were in place and to learn about them in a different way than maybe we have been hearing in the news. And so that kind of, that understanding is going to ultimately allow us to move forward and hopefully change these injustices that are affecting many people.
Yeah, and with that goes into, we did a lot of research previously to going on our trip. We met as a group many times, and we would watch documentaries and see videos and talk to people. Debbie Stromberg, who's from Creator Lutheran, she was emailing everyone out the wazoo about like all these different people to try to like say, okay, like you're part of this, you know more about this than I do, like how can we help you? Her husband, Paul, he's from New Mexico, so we like learned a little bit about him and like what he's seen. And so we really just try to tap into all these resources as possible and bridge new connections with people so that we could have this very like all-inclusive way to like understand people, and we could like reach out to as many different types of people as possible. So good old Debbie was just the sweetest. She is like the sweetest person ever, and was just like, hey, can you like talk to us, hey, can you like do this to us, just so that we could understand as much as possible. So she definitely really helped that, but we just try to do as much research prior to going on the trip as possible so that we could be best equipped to like learn and be respectful as we were learning and experiencing these like new cultures to us.
So in our service learning trip, there was really no service component, but I think we can all agree that even though all of the research we've done hasn't like prepared us for the trip, and we're still processing a lot of it, and throughout our conversation and presentation, we will have opportunities where you can help the people in El Paso. So that can, we're going in to learn and then coming out with knowledge of how to act and how to help their communities effectively.
And then, as Alice said, like there wasn't service, but we were very privileged to be able to hear a lot of the stories of the people who are directly being affected by these injustices, and that by far superseded any type of service that we could have done. The learning that we incurred from those conversations with these people, I like can't even begin to tell you how impactful that was for all of us, and I think that that was really valuable, and more so than it would have been if it was service.
Yeah, well, and just now with that knowledge and with that understanding that we now have, we know how we can serve, we know that there's places where we can help, so our goal was to like learn so we know how to like effectively serve.
Thank you.
So the next part of our presentation is going to be a sort of a day-by-day, event-by-event walkthrough of our process. And the first thing that we did was the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. And Megan briefly mentioned a man named John Jahadi, and you can see him in the white up there on the picture to the left. And he is just about the smartest, most knowledge guru man I have ever met. And he knows maybe six languages. He knows a bunch of random dates. He's a history geek. He made that event just more awesome, I guess. And the Pueblo Cultural Center is just this massive ring, and every room is filled to the brim with artifacts and traditions and culture, and it was really a nice experience. This is the Coronado Historic Site, and we were there for much longer than we probably should have been because we got trapped by a thunderstorm. And the kind of funny thing about that is that we went into this dwelling called a kiva, and it's not a place that people live in. It's a place where the native people would go and have ceremonies hoping for rain. And we went into there, and immediately a thunderstorm started. Which was really nice.
You can see it in the distance on the photo on the left. You can see the rain like beginning to pour a couple miles off.
We got kind of swamped there for a little bit, but it was really, we went down into it and there were murals and paintings, and they weren't original, but they were a very accurate representation of what it would have looked like a long time ago.
Okay, so then as I think we mentioned earlier, but maybe not. We, in El Paso, Texas, we went to a Lutheran church called Iglesia Luterana Cristo Rey. And at that church, we were very incredibly privileged to be able to hear stories of undocumented immigrants and their families. And so these are photos from two. On the left is a woman that shared her story with us one of the first nights. And then on the right, we went to a woman's house the following evening, and we got to talk to her and her family, and she made us very delicious tamales and snow cones, and it was really good. But these stories were so impactful in helping us to understand this problem of immigration, and how and putting a face to this issue was incredible.
And this is the border wall. We went and we saw a presentation with a Border Patrol officer, and this was probably one of the most difficult parts of the trip for many of us, just because it was so infuriating that the officer was either giving very vague answers to our questions or deflecting or really not giving us any knowledge that we were asking for. And it was just kind of a really sad day for all of us.
So also with what we did with in El Paso, on the left, that is a doctor that we talked to. She worked primarily in kind of like, essentially like all the people in Mexico that needed health care that like any other healthcare provider would turn away because they were poor, impoverished, homeless, whatever. And she's like, come here, I'll give you what you need. So we talked to her just about what she's done and how she got into medicine. And that was really interesting to see just like kind of how like Mexican culture influenced like their healthcare system. And then on the right, you can see we went to, so the woman in the plaid, that is Sister B. She is really, really funny and sweet. She's an Irish nun. And essentially this place that we're in, Casa Vides, she and a bunch of other, there's like a few other nuns there too. And that is one house out of many that essentially serve immigrants. Undocumented or documented, they have all these houses, buildings, around the area, and essentially immigrants will come in, they'll be dropped off, they'll whatever, and they have beds, they have food, they have resources, they get them connected with whatever they need to be connected with, they'll get them like train tickets, whatever it's needed. So it was really cool talking to her about her mission. She was going to retire at 80, but then realized that her retirement home was too nice and people were boring and she didn't like it, so she went and just had a conversation with someone who was working with this Casa Vides. She said she started talking to them at 2 and started working by 4. So she is pretty incredible. I think she's like in her 80s now. Really cool person. Like 80, I don't know, she's probably like at least 85 or something. But she was really cool to hear about. And it's just a bunch of these like old women that are just helping like everyone. So it was really interesting to see like how they've seen like the influx of immigrants like coming and going. And like, I mean, one thing that she was saying is that right now they're getting a lot of pregnant women crossing the border. And that was like really hard to hear because of how like, I mean, you hear about the conditions and what people are doing to cross the border. And then imagine like being pregnant all the while. Like pregnancy isn't like easy like in a first world country with like resources, let alone trying to like cross into another country. So that was really cool, and she was really fun to talk to. It was really sweet.
Oh yes, this is the this is the lawyer that we went to see. She's an immigration lawyer, and she's been doing this for how long? Like over 20 years. And she was very knowledgeable. She gave us a packet full of information that was very useful, full of busted myths about immigrants and statistics. And she talked to us very fast. She was almost out of breath because of just how much information she was trying to shove at us in the space of like a half an hour. It was insane how how much she knew about her subject. Ooh, yes, the Center for Action and Contemplation. This was one of the last major activities that we went to. It was a place that was started by Father Richard Rohr, who is a published author some of you may have heard of. He has a bunch of new philosophies about nonviolence and acceptance that I'm really interested in. I had never heard of him, but I'm definitely going to check out his works now. And I encourage you guys to as well, because it was very interesting. We had mindfulness, we had contemplation, and their entire view on action is very interesting because it's not taking up arms and marching on any place. It's more of educating the next generation so that they can take action in a very peaceful way. It's kind of like a slow invasion more than a march, which is probably the way to go. It was my favorite place. And this leads right into our experiences, and I am going to go first because that last place was my best experience. And for the Center for Action and Contemplation, we all kind of sat in a circle, and we all listened to this man who was standing in for Richard Rohr talk about different things. And he was a very good talking piece. He was more of like asking us questions more than telling us things, which was kind of a switch from, we were hearing a bunch of stories and a bunch of information the entire time that we were on this trip. And then the very last day, someone was kind of asking us to reflect, and that was very nice. It was a very nice change of pace. And I really appreciated the center. It had a lot of nice green space with berries and this massive tree. I think they called it the Trinity Tree because it had this deformity, which really made it more beautiful, that its trunk split into three, and it went completely three directions, and it covered the entire yard with foliage. And it was just a beautiful place to sit and think and relax, and it was definitely my favorite part of the trip.
I'm back. Oh, what to talk about? I mean, there's so many moments on this. I like to call it a journey, personally, because, you know, caravan, journey. There's so many moments on this trip that are going to stick with all of us, I feel like, for the rest of our lives. But there was one part that probably was probably the most, you know, it was a moment in the trip where we, it was really late at night, actually. We had just come back in to the church we were staying at in El Paso, and it was like past 11:30 at night. It was really late, and Pastora Rosemary, pastor at Cristo Rey, had us gather in a circle, and she turned off all the lights, and so we were all sitting in the circle in the church. And there was this one lone candle that was lit right in the center. And so what she described was, what I would like us to do now is we're going to go one by one around the circle, and I would ask you to please talk about or lift up a certain light that is in your life and what brought you to this circle right here. And that part was just, it was really emotional for, I think, all of us. A lot of us had very emotional lights to lift up. The person I lifted up, you're going to like this, Ian. I lifted my brother up as my light in my life. Right now, I have many lights, but Ian was the one I mentioned, and just to he's really been kind of the guy who's really been there for me, or the person I think of when I'm really down. So he's always the one that kind of keeps me going, and I feel like I'm the one of the people that keeps him going. So that was the whole passing around the candle was a very moving experience, I think, for all of us, but especially for me.
Okay, this is something I wrote last night at like 2 a.m, so bear with me a little bit, but I just kind of was reflecting upon the trip, and this is what I wrote. So the things that I was privileged enough to witness and the people that I was fortunate enough to meet over the course of this trip, I cannot even begin to grasp today as I reflect upon it. I am in a state of frustration, of confusion, and of helplessness. And the thoughts that are in my head right now are moving at a very rapid pace and changing by the second. The first experience that I want to talk about is our time at Iglesia Luterana Cristo Rey in El Paso, where we began to unpack the issue of immigration as it presents itself in our country. This part for me, as I believe it was for many others on this trip, was one of the most impactful. During our time at Cristo Rey, we were privileged to be able to listen to the stories of immigrants and of families. We heard from the pastor of Cristo Rey and listened to why she felt compelled to this issue. We heard the narratives of other people who have dedicated their lives doing what they can to make a difference. And we heard from an immigration lawyer and talked to a Border Patrol officer. These 2 days were some of the hardest days in my life, and I think that there's still many things that I need to process from this time. When we got to stand in front of the 18-foot-tall fence that divided the cities of El Paso, Texas, and Juarez, Mexico, everything changed. There are no words to emphasize what it's like to be in front of that wall. And as we listened to stories of women and listened to women and families as they told stories and cried from their pain, their separation, their faith, their love, and suffering, I felt helpless. We can sit and we can watch the news and retweet and repost on social media, but at this point, tangible change needs to occur. People's lives are at stake in this issue, and they deserve more than a repost. Many of us are still struggling to process and come to terms with what we experienced and witnessed this past week. And as we move forward, we hope to grow in our understanding and continue a dialogue of what we can do as a community to help these people that are directly being impacted by systemic injustices. I wanted to thank the congregation for all of the opportunities that I've been exposed to these past 4 years. Every trip that I've gone on and experienced has been so impactful in my life, and it really helped create who I am today. And I wanted to say thank you because you all have helped assist me in going on these trips, and for that I will be eternally grateful. This trip I know will be valuable in helping direct me for the rest of my life, and though it was really hard and really challenging, for many of us, we are all still wanting to have conversations with you, and I think that many of us don't really know what to say at this point because we got back last night and haven't had time to process, but we want you to approach us and have conversations about that so we can create a dialogue about the things that we saw and move forward as a congregation to create change. Because as difficult as it is to explain how impactful this trip was, we want to share that all with you. Thank you.
Yeah, I would say I resonate with just about everything that Ellie said. There was a lot. Our days were really full. We barely had any downtime. And a lot of what we faced was really, really difficult. And not that I would take any of it back. I think with stuff like immigration and Native American injustice, like that is difficult, and it's been difficult for years and years and years. That goes back before I was born, and so I appreciated how we were put in these really uncomfortable, difficult situations, and we were kind of like forced to grapple with this like harsh truth of this world that we live in. Overall, we try to do some debriefing throughout the week where we just try to like unpack what we've heard. And I think one of the ones that was really impactful for me was just I guess yesterday. Wow. So yesterday, Jess actually led us in a really cool reflection that was kind of just looking at, like, obviously it was at the very end of the week, and we talked to all these different people, and it was like, what have you seen, and what are some of those, like, core desires that come from these people? And at least for me, what I was seeing was that for all these Native people they were talking to, all they wanted was for people to understand and respect them. And then for all these immigrants, all they wanted was to live in a space, safe space with their whole family. Which are two things that seem really, really basic. Everyone wants to be understood, everyone wants to be respected, everyone wants to be with their family, and everyone wants to be safe. And yet for all these people, that has been so difficult for years and years and years. All these systemic injustices that are just there, and are, I mean, we were talking to that Border Patrol agent, and he was saying that, like, our immigration laws haven't changed for like 16 years. And I don't know about you, but I've seen changes in like how immigration has been working over those 16 years, and yet like our country hasn't been dealing with it any differently. So I think that was just kind of interesting, that it was like these desires and these wants that these people have are so basic. And at least for me, like, I take a lot of that for granted, the fact that I can see my family and that I feel decently safe most of the time, and that I don't feel like if I walk outside, I'm going to get, like, murdered in the streets. Because that's where a lot of people these feel. A lot of the people that we talk to, they're coming to the United States because they don't feel safe in their city. They're afraid for their children. They're afraid for themselves. And all they want is to be in a space where they can raise their kids, and they aren't going to be afraid that, like, their kid won't come home from school one day. Because that is a reality for a lot of these cities that people are coming from. So I think that was just really impactful, that we were really looking at just, like, some of these desires that people have are these, like, basic things that a lot of us have that we don't understand how much of, like, a privilege that is. So I just thought, like, obviously I'm still, like, very much in the midst of processing everything that we've been dealt with. I think this trip was by far one of the most profound weeks I've ever had. And I love the fact that we've been given all this information to deal with. Because a lot of what's happened in our country is that people try to push things off and dehumanize others and, like, put up this fake wall or, like, ignore, like, the reality of the situation. Which obviously isn't going to create any change. If you don't acknowledge that there's a problem, there's nothing to fix. So I just really think that this week has been really impactful. I can't say that enough. And like Ellie said, like, we'd love to continue this dialogue. We'd love to continue this conversation, especially over these next few weeks as we all, like, continue to process through this and come to more understanding of, like, what we've learned. So yeah, please talk to us, ask questions. We'd love to, like, continue this conversation, because that's what needs to happen for change to occur.
Good morning. My name is Jess Ingman, and this is Isaiah Ingman, and I'm grateful to be here. I was just a few months ago hired to accompany the Southeast Portland Youth Collective, so part-time I'm supporting youth and leaders from all of the congregations involved in the collective, and so it's great to be here with you this morning. And I just wanted to share that for me, this trip, I came with the lens of a mother. Isaiah is 18 months old, and it was, I left him here with my husband Mark to come on this trip. And hearing the stories of parents separated from their children for years at a time was incredibly moving. And as I found myself separate from Isaiah, I thought, gosh, there probably isn't anything that I wouldn't do to be able to be with him and to keep him safe. And I think that sitting with, kind of as parents or family members or people, when we think about what we would do to be with people we love, is a really great way to enter the conversation. that you all will be having in the coming weeks. And I just want to share, like, in terms of another really big impact was visiting the immigration lawyer office and hearing just how unequal the time wait is if someone does want to immigrate legally. Right now, the wait for a visa, if you're from Mexico, is 30 years. 30 years to have a legal way to be with someone that you love. And if you are an asylum seeker and you happen to cross through the border at El Paso, you have a 6% rate of getting your asylum claim granted. Whereas if you come through Boston or New York City, they have an 85% rate of being granted. So there is a lot of inequality and a lot of unfairness in how, quote, legal immigration can and is happening. So there's a lot of work to do, but I think if we ground ourselves in our who we are as people and as families, we can move in a healing direction.
That's loud, sorry. Yesterday was a lot. Throughout our week, we haven't really had any time to process, and we got a lot of information, and I said before, the research that we have done up to this point, I don't think prepared us at all. We didn't do a lot of service to help these communities, but now that we're back, we have heard what the Cristo Rey wants, how they need our help. And one of those ways is to help sponsor kids in their after-school program. It's only $120, so if you are able, I urge you to donate to them. They're a really amazing organization, and I don't think that we could have been able to do this without them. Another way to help them is to become a partner and donate to their church. On the last day, we sat around in a circle, like Trevor said, and one thing they really asked for is to donate and help support their community, because they really are doing amazing work, and a way that you can help and be a part of our trip and help us and them is to donate. Also, talk to our state legislators. There are laws that we've learned about before the trip that are coming through, and just start conversations and help enact change. Thank you.
So as Ellie already stated, I just want to say how thankful I am to be serving in this community, to be serving this church and that supports these amazing youth and young adults in the ways they do. My heart swells up just thinking about how much you give of yourselves, your time, your talents, and support for the experiences that these students had. And I'm just listening and was looking at Ellie, Megan, and Alice, and looking at them and going, these are seniors graduating who are going off to their next journeys, and you helped raise them up. These are the young people that you have in your church, and you should be exceptionally proud of them, because I believe that if they're the leaders for the next generation, then we have a positive reality coming for us, because they're amazingly powerful young people. My reflection. My reflection from the week. They all expressed they're having trouble processing it all, still need more time. And I think that's part of it, is process. And some of us learn through conversation, some of us learn through inner reflection, some of us learn through all different ways, and we're going to need that time. But one thing that really stuck out to me was a story that we heard in El Paso from a woman who talked about being separated from her husband, that they came over to the United States, and her husband ends up getting in a, you know, just a standard traffic stop. Wasn't a traffic stop. He was going back across the border because his mother was really ill. He went back across the border to visit his mom because, I mean, you know, your mom's really sick. You want to go visit her and make sure and check on. And on his way back over, he ends up getting caught by immigration because he had both a visitor's visa and a Texas state ID, which to immigration says you're not supposed to be here, you know, legally long term. And so they deported him. His wife and three kids were still in the United States. They had left where they were in Juarez, in Mexico, because they were fearful for the safety of their family and felt the United States was a better place to be. As a young father, I was trying to imagine what I would do in that situation. He spent 2.5 years working to get himself back over the border in any way that he could. He and his wife. There was actually no legal recourse for him. Once you get deported, you have to wait 5 years before you can even put yourself back into the process. 5 years. Then, if you try to attempt another time to get across the border, it adds another 5 years. And then it adds 10 years. And we found out from the border agent that we were working with when we asked, what was the percentage of people who coming across the border were criminals? And they said about 15% of the people who were trying to cross the border were criminals. Well, in further conversation, we found out you should also ask the follow-up question, how many of that 15% are criminals because they've attempted to cross the border multiple times? And it drops another 10%. And it was like, what? And so I'm sitting there going with this story of this father with three young kids and his wife in another country and going, what would I do? What would I do to be connected to my family, to not be away from them? You know, at the time, he was the primary breadwinner for his family. His wife ended up adapting. You know, she was actually a nurse, but couldn't actually be a nurse in the United States because of immigration status, also because our realities around how we train and how we certify don't cross over from one border to another. And she had to learn to make tamales. And ended up making tamales to help get her husband across the border. And so, I don't know why, but that story still just sticks with me, in my gut, in my soul. That if I was in that situation, what would I do? And I started thinking about, why do we have systems that stop families from uniting? Why is that even a reality in our country? If we're the land of the free, why do we have fences? You know, if we're the wealthiest country in the world, why can't we invite more people in? I don't get this. It doesn't make any sense to me. So, thanks everybody.